Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the October issue of Boy's Life magazine. And our first article is entitled Cave Camping. And that's on page 16. And it has a picture, actually two pictures here of two boys in a cave with their little headlights on their helmets looking through a cave. And then there's a little caption here of one of our gear guy, let's gear up for the USA's largest underground lake. North Carolina scouts explore tight passageways deep beneath the Earth's surface, then enjoy a relaxing ride on a massive underground lake. Through a hole in the ground near Sweetwater, Tennessee, there's a passageway more than 100 feet long that leads visitors underneath the Earth's surface. At the end of the passageway, there's a series of rooms full of rock-like formations called stalactites and stalagmites. At the end of those rooms, there's a giant room so dark that if you turn off your flashlight, you can't see anything. And that's a picture here of two boys. Sam Abernathy Top and Harrison Chikowski emerge intact and a little bit muddy from a tight travel crawl space between within Crakehead Caverns. No matter how long you wait for your eyes to adjust, and at the end of the giant room, there's a lake so large that most of it hasn't even been explored yet. This is Crakehead Caverns, home for the night for Troop 9 from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The guys have brought hard hats, headlamps, flashlights, and a bunch of extra batteries, and they're ready to do some exploring. Tight squeeze. Crakehead Caverns, formed millions of years ago by rushing water that slowly eroded out massive holes in the limestone rock, are named after their first owner, Chief Crakehead, a Cherokee, Native American. Over the next 100 or so years, the caves were used as a source for a material called saltpeter, a primary ingredient in gunpowder used in Civil War firearms, a mushroom farm, and now as a tourist attraction. But the scouts from Troop 9 aren't your average tourists. They're here for the spelunking. Away from the cave's most popular rooms lie several challenging passageways that the scouts can explore. Some are tall enough to walk through. Others require them to crawl. All are very, very narrow. The first challenge was a passage appropriately named Fat Man's Misery. It was very tight, very small, with very tight corners, says 14-year-old Life Scout Nathan Harry. There were a few minutes when you were jammed in there that it was pretty scary. And shows a picture here of the boys looking at the cavern and looking, waving their flashlight and just noticing the different crevices on it. And then has one boy, here he is, the guides at Crakehead Caverns don't require visitors to wear helmets, but Lee Franklin and the rest of Troop 9 are taking no chances. Underground flowers. As the scouts neared the end of Fat Man's Misery, their guide had them turn off their headlamps and navigate the rest of the path in the dark. That's when they experience true darkness, very unlike the darkness in your bedroom at night. Your eyes are useless, says 12-year-old Life Scout Garrett Gardeau. I put my hand right in front of my eyes and couldn't see anything. Without sight, the scouts relied on their sense of touch, and each made it through Fat Man's Misery without too much misery. In the larger rooms of the cavern, their guide pointed out the anorthosite crystals along the cave walls. The crystals, often called cave flowers because of the way they stick out from the wall, are found in only 7 caves in the world. Exit going up. At the bottom of Crakehead Caverns, there's a body of water called the Lost Sea. It was discovered in 1905 by a 13-year-old boy who happened to spot a small opening that no one else had ever noticed. Beyond that opening, he found the largest underground lake in the Western Hemisphere. The scouts of Troop 9 explored the Lost Sea in a glass-bottomed boat that revealed the cavern's only permanent residents, trout, brought in decades ago by the cave's owners that, without any natural predators, grow several feet long. It's not every day you get to take a boat ride on a lake that's underground, says 12-year-old Life Scout Jeffrey Gardeau. The scouts spend the night on the cold ground, insulated by a tarp and sleeping pads. The temperature inside the cave is 58 degrees year-round. Early the next morning, they packed up, hiked up about 2,000 feet, including 132 rock steps through the cave exit, and began the 8-hour drive home. It was a great trip, Nathan says. I think everyone will remember it for a long time. And then it has shows a picture here of them looking down into the lake. Anthodites are cave formations that look like clusters of needles. Exploring an underground lake. The visible portion of the Lost Sea is 800 feet long and 220 feet wide. The entire lake is actually larger than that, much larger than that. In the mid-1970s, a group of explorers led by experienced cave diver Jim Wyatt spent 2 years mapping the part of the Lost Sea that goes where no glass-bottom boat can go, deep into the recesses of the caverns, into gigantic chambers that are completely underwater. The team anchored a boat on the Lost Sea, then dropped hundreds of feet of line into the darkest section of the lake. They took the line with them on their dives and used it to find their way back to their vessel. Diving several days a month for 2 years, the team found that the portion of Craighead Caverns that's underwater is similar to the portion that's above water. It's a series of enormous rooms, some of which seemingly have no end. With powerful underwater lights, the divers could see about 15 feet. They attempted to measure the size of the passage they were exploring with an underwater sonar unit. But the room was too large to get a reading. It just went on and on and on. After charting out about 1,500 feet of passageway, the length of the live football fields, of 5 football fields, the environment became too dangerous for the divers. Their bubbles were disturbing the layers of silt and rock that clung to the roof of the underwater chambers. At one point, a rock the size of a small car tumbled from the ceiling and passed just a few feet from the divers. They could have easily been crushed. More and more rocks were falling on the divers with each attempt until eventually they felt it was no longer safe. No one has attempted to explore the lake since. And here it has a picture here of the Troop 9 in the glass-bottom boat crossing the lake with a caption, "The scouts take a boat ride on the Lost Sea, the largest underground lake in the United States." Well, our next article, let's go to Pedro Answers Reader's Mail. That's found on page 2. The Hitching Wreck. Pedro Answers Reader Mail. Pedro, I'm a huge, huge fan of Boys Life, especially the Scout Program articles. My troop usually uses that month's article as our program, so I usually know a thing or two by the time of my troop's monthly campout. That's from Mr. A. Johnson, and Mr. A. in Johnson City, New York. Pedro responds, "The boss might almost crack a smile over this one, Mr. A. Thanks. Dear Pedro, I have 6 years of Boys Life sitting on my bookshelf, and I'm very close to becoming an Eagle Scout. I'm glad I've been reading the magazine all this time. It's full of stories of scouts doing amazing things I find inspiring. You guys never seem to run out of material. What would you put in the magazine if you didn't have a story?" That's from David Dubin in Sarasota, Florida. "With thousands of troops and crews and packs doing fun stuff every month, we'll never run out of stories to write about, David." Dear Pedro, I was interested in your article, Fighting Fake Cash, in May. I like to collect coins and bills. What kid doesn't, right? And it was cool to look at new bills and the different ways the government has tried to keep people from forging them. That's from Noah Gaudreau in South Portland, Maine. "The new bills aren't as green as they used to be, are they, Noah? Oh, well. It just made me happy to look at them." Dear Pedro, I look forward to receiving the magazine every month and reading the tips, tricks, and jokes that seem to fill it. I find the feature articles highly informative and fun. Thanks for more than 50 years of scouting fun. Demetrius K. Matthews, Sunnyvale, California. You're right, Demetrius, but only by half. Boys Life celebrates its 100th anniversary next year, and you're welcome. Dear Pedro, I'm a girl, but your magazines are awesome. You're always talking about the boss. Are you anyone's boss? P.S. My brother loves your magazine. That's from Meredith Meadows in Ripley, Tennessee. The boss might hee-haw like I do when I show him this letter, Meredith. I'm the boss of my corral and all the grass and hay in it. That's about it. Dear Pedro, I have questions about Sleep Right, Sleep Tight in the May issue. Three photos showed guys sleeping in tents staked to the side of a cliff. Why would anyone want to do that? What if you were a sleepwalker? That's from Caleb O'Connor in Cheyenne, Wyoming. They do it for the challenge, Caleb, and I'm sure they don't have an issue with sleepwalking. Yikes! Dear Pedro, I really like fishing, and my favorite kind of fish to catch is a big one. I was reading about a Pacific barrel eye, a fish that has a head you can see through. Is there such thing as a clear-headed burro? From Aaron Strickland in Sharpsburg, Virginia. Well, Aaron, you have succeeded in making a comedian for a minute out of the boss. He says you can look into my ear and see daylight on the other side. And if that's not clear-headed, he doesn't know what is. I don't think he's quite ready for think and grin. Dear Wacky Pedro, why did the boss hire you when he doesn't like you? Alex Anaki in Sarasota, Florida. Oh, the boss likes me just fine, Alex. He just gripes that he has to motivate me all the time. Besides, he inherited me when I arrived in the crate from Philmont. And after that clear-headed crack, he owes me one. Maybe I'll mosey over and see if he'd like to treat me to an alfalfa milkshake down in the cantina. I won't get my hopes up, though. See you next time. I'm scouting around Outdoor Nation. And let's go to Outdoor Nation. Just Outdoor Nation, the BSA has joined forces with Outdoor Nation, a community of youth that has come together to champion the outdoors. The group is dedicated to influencing government policies and programs and providing advice to outdoors-related companies and organizations. Join for free and indicate that you were referred by the Boy Scouts of America. Our next article, Sports, has a big picture of Mr. Victorino with the title, Hail to the Victorino. The rank of Eagle Scout isn't the only pinnacle Shane Victorino has reached. The speedy Philadelphia Phillies center fielder has been to the World Series the past two Octobers, winning a title in 2008. Played for the USA in the second ever World Baseball Classic in 2009, has won two consecutive gold gloves, and led the majors in triples last year with 13. Whew. Boys Life, what did you like most about Scouts? Shane, hanging out with friends, camping. There were nights, though, when we were sleeping on the ground, eating not great meals, thinking, what am I doing here? But it taught you survival skills. I was lucky, growing up in Hawaii, so there weren't zero-degree campouts. Boys Life, did you aim for Eagle Scout from the start? Shane, when you first start, you want to get there because it's the ultimate. But then it just kind of happens. Suddenly, you're in a place that not too many people have been. Boys Life, is playing in the World Series a pressure cooker or fun? Shane, fun. In 08, all through the playoffs, I kept saying to Matt Stairs, it feels like a regular game. And then day one of the World Series, he says, are you nervous yet? And I wasn't. It's what you dream of as a kid, and that realization helps keep you focused. Boys Life, what did you like about playing in the World Baseball Classic? Shane, Seeing how different countries approach the game, I love pulling on the USA jersey and representing America. But seeing the love and passion different countries had for baseball was incredible. Boys Life, what did you take away from Scouts that still helped you as an adult? Shane, not only leadership skills, but the structure that I had all come into play. Structure has helped me with everything I do. And honestly, the motto, be prepared, you always have to prepare yourself no matter what's coming, no matter what you're doing. Now let's go to page 10 and find out about a troop in need. And it's from Scouting Around. Troop 100 from Meridianville, Alabama, had worked hard to prepare for a weekend camping trip. It all came crashing down when they discovered that their trailer, full of all their gear, had been stolen from the church parking lot. The camping trip was canceled, and spirits were at an all-time low. But not for long. Scouts from Troop 17 in nearby Huntsville, Alabama, saw a newspaper article about what had happened to Troop 100. They knew right away they had to do something. Within a few days, the scouts from Troop 17 delivered a trailer full of camping gear they no longer needed to Troop 100. Good deed done. Spirits lifted. Next camping trip, most definitely on. Troop 100 planned to paint an inscription on their new trailer that would read, "In honor of Troop 17. Helping a hospital be prepared." Opening a new hospital is no easy chore. When officials at the Western Maryland Regional Medical Center needed to test their new hospital's operation, they called on scouts from the Potomac and Baltimore area councils. Before the facility opened, the scouts took hospital employees on a test run. First, they used hospital maps to explore the entire 585,000-square-foot facility and, in the process, ensured that the maps were accurate. Next, they served as patients, each assuming a fictitious name, age, and ailments. They were taken through the process that a real patient might go through, including exams from doctors and trips to the food court. And in the end, the scouts sat down with hospital staff and shared their ideas on what went right and what could be done better. The hospital opened its doors for business just a week later. Collecting. On page 11, made for a mission. Deep in the heart of Makuhera City, robots are constructed on demand and sent to fight evil wherever needed. Build your own courageous robot by visiting the Lego Hero Factory. I collect point cards from hardware stores. That's from Adam Helwell in Farmington, Utah. I collect maps from all over the world. That's from Krishna Nelson, Cincinnati, Ohio. I collect old... I collect old Coca-Cola glasses. I have one from 1947, and that's from Craig Redden in Bowling Green, Kentucky. I collect railroad artifacts, pins, cards, pencils, flattened pennies, and brochures from tourist railroads across the country. I collect $2 bills. I have 50 of them. I collect, and that's from Michael Caroma in Bowie, Maryland. I collect soccer jerseys. I even have some from Egypt and Italy. And that's from Jacob Clark in Stage College, Pennsylvania. I collect bookmarks from libraries around the world. I have more than 50. And that's from Vihan Hanna in Livingston, New Jersey. I collect bobbers. Some even glow in the dark. That's from Shane Pagel in Bellevue, Nebraska. I collect license plates from around the world. My favorite is from New Zealand, and that's from Harrison Nobles in Southport, North Carolina. I collect models of old military forts, and that's from Ian Hamilton in Valrico, Florida. I collect discarded hubcaps from various sports and luxury cars. My favorites are from a Lamborghini and Bentley, and that's from Steven Stenke in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. I collect travel pamphlets from wherever we go on vacation. And that's from Christian Pittman in Lutherville, Timonian, Maryland. And finally, I collect transistor radios from the 50s and 60s. And that's from Jace Delker in Monroe, Georgia. Well, here's a question that don't know who to ask. Ask Jenny and Steve. Just ask us anything. Here we go. I'm 12, and I love Star Wars. I even play a game about it. But my friends mock me for liking it. They think it's dumb. What do I do? Jenny, here's the thing. You need to keep this obsession in check. While it's totally okay to be all about Star Wars, it's pretty awesome after all. You don't want it to define you. So set some limits, like, say, not wearing Star Wars shirts to school more than once a month. And find a new video game that aren't Star Wars related to friends when they come over. You have other options in case Jedis aren't their thing. Steve, here's a secret. Later in life, having a pop culture guilty pleasure is a good thing. When I run into people these days who actually get my Voltron references, not only does it bring me joy, but they actually think I'm cool. It could happen to you, too. Next question. My mom is really overprotective. She's always asking me questions and not letting me do anything. She doesn't let me do things like riding my bike over to a friend's house. It's not even that far away. My dad's more relaxed, but he won't let me do anything without checking with my mom first. How do I tell my mom to give me space without hurting her feelings? Steve says, well, when I was a kid, my mom was really overprotective, too. The good news is, the older you get and the more responsible you prove to be, the more she relaxes. These days, I joke with my mom that I don't have to worry because you do all the worrying for me. Funny, but true. And Jenny says, if there's something you really want to do, sit down with them both at the same time and explain why it is important to you. No whining, no crying, no begging, just a very matter-of-fact conversation that makes them realize you are mature enough to handle the responsibility you're asking them to give you. And now let's go to page 14, Boys Live Headliners, Scouts and Others with Big Stories. His name is Andy Partridge. He was born August 10th, 1996. His hometown, Park City, Utah. His scout rank, First Class, Troop 72, Park City. He made headlines when he won 3 gold medals in the 2009 Junior Olympics in aerials, halfpipe, and slopestyle skiing in his age division. At the 2010 Junior Olympics, he won the United States national title in slopestyle. The scoop? Andy won for best trick at the 2009 United States Open at Copper Mountain, Colorado, and placed second overall in the Junior Jam halfpipe. He started skiing at age 8 and competing at 9. He practices 5 days a week during the winter and keeps up his schedule in the summer by skiing on special plastic material at the Park City Olympic Park. The future? Andy wants to make it to the finals in the skiing at Aspen Open in Aspen, Colorado. His advice? I have found that the more I practice skiing, the better I get. Here's the next one. Ben Dabney, netting a win. Star Scout makes a difference. His name is Ben Dabney. He was born June 27, 1997, and his hometown is Radford, Virginia. His scout rank, Star Scout, Troop 158 in Blacksburg, Virginia. He made headlines by winning the 2010 rubber band contest for young inventors. The scoop? After reading about people in Africa dying from diseases caught from mosquitoes, Ben built netting people can sleep under to keep the mosquitoes out. The netting frame is easy to put up and take down. The future? Ben wants to be a forensic scientist. And his advice? If you have to keep working at it, you have to keep working at it. Inventing was a great experience for me, and I think more people should try it. You could really help people. And finally, Eric Beeler, born January 17, 1995. Hometown, Alpharetta, Georgia. Scout rank, Star Scout, Troop 87, Roswell, Georgia. Made headlines by placing second in C-SPAN's Student Cam 2009 Middle School Documentary National Contest for his video, Job Loss, Weakening the American Economy. The Scoop. C-SPAN, a cable TV channel that covers the United States government, asked students for a short video about the most urgent issue President Obama should address. Eric chose job loss and the economy. He interviewed a United States representative, state representative, police chief, and management consultant. His video aired on C-SPAN. Other interests: debate, Model United Nations, Skills USA, public speaking, Spanish Club, cross country. Advice: if you really work hard, amazing things will happen. Now, let's go to page 35 and read about 100 Below Heroes. Two winter campouts totaling nearly 100 degrees below freezing? That's just how Troop 230 rolls. Troop 230 from Eagle River, Alaska, experiences extreme adventure year-round. Their town sits along the swift-flowing Eagle River, which drains into the Cook Inlet, home to beluga whales and active volcanoes. Moose walk into town and bears roam the surface and birch forest close to where they hold their meetings. The Iditarod and National Historic Trail, which covers 1,500 miles, passes right through their town. In Eagle River, the first day of summer has more than 19 hours of sunlight. Then winter comes, and the days have only 5 or so hours of sunlight, and snow piles up to 4 feet. But the scouts of Troop 230 do not morph into couch potatoes. Instead, they go camping. One bright, cold February morning last year, with the tallest mountain in North America, Mount McKinley, towering above him, 15-year-old senior patrol leader Luke Plum gazed out onto the ice field full of possibilities and yelled, "Come on, guys, let's go camping!" And so Troop 30 skied or snowshoed into the frosty winter forest, pulling their sleds behind them, looking for another adventure. Learning from mistakes. The previous summer, the guys had decided to go for their 100 below patches. They planned two separate campouts, and afterward they would add up the total degrees below freezing and hope the sun would be 100 below. The January event had been brutally cold. The guys worked hard to dig out their quinsies, and they got wet from the snow in their own sweat. Some of the boys were shivering, a sign of hypothermia, so they did jumping jacks and then peeled off their pants, shirts, long underwear, and socks in exchange for cleaner clothes. Dry, clean clothes can go a long way to getting warm again. The fun was just beginning. First-class scout Nate Woodring, 13, and first-class scout Justin Doty, 12, made their quinsy too small and the snow walls too thin. They felt claustrophobic, cold, and squished all night. And that wasn't bad enough. They left their packs with their clothes in them, outside the quinsy. In the morning, their clothes were frozen stiff. But Nate and Justin felt that they'd learned from their mistakes and bravely signed up to camp out again in February. A good time for donuts. Inspired by Luke's call to action, the scouts trekked 1.5 miles to Byers Lake, where they stopped for some ice fishing and shelter building. Then they conducted their own orienteering exercise with 5 stations, igloo building, ice fishing, beat the clock fire starting, ice rescue, donut making, and, of course, donut eating. Why donuts? The high calories help them keep warm. At least that's what they claimed. Earlier in the week, the scouts had cooked spaghetti and meatballs and stored the food in vacuum-sealed bags. At their camp out, they simply placed the bags in boiling water, used tongs to lift them out of the dump, and hot food on paper plates. After dinner, it was back to shelter building. But you'd have a hard time finding anybody who was really all that disappointed. After all, it's the adventure that they'll remember the most, not a patch. This, Luke says, was one of the best campouts I've ever been on. Well, we've run out of time for today's reading. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and vision impaired audience and readily available as a podcast after today's broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, until next time.